Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana. Hello, everyone. That was a little bit hot. Sorry about that. I was eating the microphone, as they say. Apologize for that, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes is with me today. We appreciate Doug taking the time. We've got a great show lined up. You know, we're going to be talking about what type of an investor should you be. You know, I've taken a long stance that the way you make your money, the way you make your income, should determine at some part, in some way, the way you should invest. And then later on, we're going to be talking about getting back to some basics and talking about some year-end tax planning ideas as we wrap up 2014. But before we get to all of that, let's get to news of the week. This week, it's brought to you by ClearNote Christmas Spectacular. This Friday or Saturday, gather up the kids for the ClearNote Christmas Spectacular. Two shows this Friday and Saturday, beginning at 7 p.m. at ClearNote Church, just across from Cars Farm Park. Did you see that U.S. crude got below $60, first time in 5 years? U.S. crude futures fell below $60 a barrel on Thursday, the first time in 5 years, as the oil market extended this week's losses on oversupply concerns. Crude was down to 59.98 cents a barrel. Big deal. And Iran, they say, the fall in oil prices is treachery. The Iran president on Wednesday said that the sharp fall in global oil prices is the result of treachery in an apparent reference to the regional rival, Saudi Arabia, which opposes oil production cuts. Iran and the people of the region will not forget such conspiracies, or in other words, treachery against the interests of the Muslim world, he said. OPEC, of course, controls about 40% of the world's oil market, and the Saudis, the largest oil exporter, produces nearly 10 million barrels a day, a third of OPEC's total, and thus far have refused to go along with Iran, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, all of which rely heavily, of course, on petroleum exports. They want to drive prices up, but the Saudis remain opposed to cutting production because of fears of cutting into their market share. Of course, that's their plan. They're going to try to get this thing down so low that it knocks out the shale producers and it cuts out some competition. I've been talking about this for some time. If you've been listening to the show, stocks are climbing ahead of big news from the European Central Bank. European stocks are up and awaiting some news from the European Central Bank. It's supposed to happen this week. The ECB is going to talk about how cheap credit the banks can get and have access to, and of course, in the latest effort to shake some life into the European economies. Analysts are expecting a take up of about, 130 billion euro. Any figure lower than that would likely be a disappointment for the markets. Of course, the thought process, conventional thinking here, is back in 2008, in 2009, when we started stimulating QE1, QE2, QE3, every possible thing we could do, our stock markets went up. And a lot of folks attributed that to the stimulus. Well, as Europe, of course, we acted decisively and in a big way, and Europe has somewhat drug their feet, and for good reason. The thought is that if they start stimulating the way we did, that their markets would react the same way. So a little bit of a tale of what might be to come. This is one that might shock you all. The U.S. 30-year Treasury bond returns have topped 25% in 2014, and no one's talking about this. And this is along with gains in the bunds and the gilts, which is the German 10-year or 30-year bond, and the gilts, which is Britain's bond. The 30-year Treasury returns are topping 25% since the first time since 2011, driven, of course, by the outlook of low inflation. Before, the U.S. sold $13 billion of securities on Thursday. And by the way, there were 2.2 times the amount of offers to buy the debt than was actually sold. So a lot of global demand still for the U.S. debt. The debt has gained actually 27%, the most since a 36% advance during the European debt crisis 3 years ago. Commodity prices have been tumbling, weakening global demand, and low economic growth across the world have really kept cost in check, and of course, inflaming demand for fixed income assets around the world are causing these yields to go down. Of course, while the U.S. economy is growing, global growth remains very sluggish, and inflation outlook is very, very low. If a 30-year bond, which actually closed at somewhere around 2.8% here in the U.S., and just so you know, that most of the time, the growth rate expected is about plus 2. So if 2.8% is what the 30-year rate is, then investors expect about 0.8% growth per year over the next 30 years. That's amazing. And of course, you might think, well, that's really low. Why would anyone buy it? Well, the German 30-year bond is below 1.5%, and Britain's has dropped now to 2.586%. It's incredible. So, Doug, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what's happening. We'll see. What am I talking about first? What type of investor should you be? And again, we're going to be talking about this. Are you kind of geared up or ready to be an aggressive investor, maybe more of a moderate guy, or should you be more conservative? We'll talk about that and the investor emotional cycle as well. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, for everyone out there that's ever invested in anything at all, most of us have gone through what is referred to in our industry as a risk tolerance questionnaire. If you work for a company that has a 401k plan, it's likely that you filled one of these out and then the computer spit back to you and said, this is the way you should invest, this much in this and this much in that. You know, maybe you've sat down with your financial advisor and they've said, hey, here's a risk tolerance questionnaire. And everyone seems to invest based on their tolerance for risk. And Doug Hughes is with me here, financial advisor, of course, with Comprehensive Financial Consultant, longtime friend and co-host of the show on many, many occasions, and also co-author of the soon-to-be-out book, Your Guide to Retirement Planning, a resource for adults age 50 and over. Doug and I are co-authoring this book, and it has gone through compliance. We're so happy about that. We're still working on getting a cover that doesn't look like a drunken golfer and an overzealous wife. But yes, if we can get one, it'll be terrific. And Doug, you know, people over the years have always invested based on their risk tolerance alone. And you and I have always taken the perspective that how you make your money, how you earn your money might be, that may dictate or should dictate at least some how you invest your money.
Well, a lot of it is based on your the total human capital. So when we look at the way people earn their income, say you are a professor and you have an income that is steady but gradually rising, you might be, as the book we referenced earlier, a stock or bond, you're really kind of like a bond. I mean, your income is not at risk. It's going to continue on unless you do something really foolish. Therefore, if you're never going to have huge spikes in income or great big bonuses or big windfalls of your income, you need to add some of that kind of return profile to your portfolio. The flip side can also be said for that person who has an income that is very dramatic. In some years, you know, we all like to think our income is going to stay the same or only go up, but the reality is a lot of people have income that fluctuates every single year.
Business owners are a good example.
So, exactly. And so you look back to 2008, and if you were invested, as most people are, you were down 30% by the end of the year. Your house lost 20 or 30%. And if you were, depending on production, your income might have been down 30%. So really a whammy all across the board. Versus saying, okay, if my income is steady, how do I have some big hits on returns? Or if my income is very volatile, how do I have some slowdown on the softer landing in extreme times?
Yeah, good friends of mine, a lot of my good friends are entrepreneurs, own their own businesses, and we talk about, you know, it's not easy to make money. And once I make that money, risking, you know, everything that I have every day,
right,
do I really want to then risk the money that I made? And that's really the theme behind this.
Yes.
Are you a stock or are you a bond book, of course, written by the great Moshe Mileski.
Great book about your human capital. It's completely different than the normal retirement planning book.
I think people also, Doug, can be lured into being too aggressive, especially when you see the markets doing what they're doing. And made famous years ago, the cycle of investor emotions. You know, when the market is going down, people are fearful, they get depressed, they panic, they have capitulation. I talked with a client today about 2008 and how people were just capitulating into early 2009. And then they just get despondent and then they go through depression. But then as the market recovers, hope, relief, and optimism returns. And then eventually excitement, thrill, and then euphoria. And I'm not exactly sure where we are in this investor cycle right now, but I'm going to say at least excitement.
Yeah, absolutely. And we notice it because, you know, a lot of our conversations, as you, David, have them and I have them, are about very realistic expectations, smoother ride to a higher place, absolute or purpose-driven type portfolio construction. And even with all the conversations we've had along those lines over the last 5 years, even this week I've had people coming in and say, should we be more aggressive? I'm feeling good.
Yep.
And that comes from nothing more than just an ad they saw in a newspaper or a magazine or some periodical that had a return somewhere that someone got this amount of money.
One of the largest disservices I think that's ever occurred to investors or happened to investors is quarterly 401k statements.
That's
because
right.
when you pull the statement out, and this is where I think uneducated investors get in trouble, they look at those returns on the back sheet of their statement and they look down the list and they say, wow, look how good that fund is doing.
That's right.
And folks, it's not doing good. It did good.
That's right.
And sometimes it's not going to continue to do good. So
That's
people
right.
are lured into when the markets are doing good, the news is hot. You know, we have this optimism, excitement, maybe even thrill occurring emotionally that they take too much risk. But, you know, Doug, on the other side, you can be too risk adverse and way too conservative. I had a guy in this week. He's a beneficiary of a client that tragically and sadly just passed away. He's in his 30s, and he said to me, you know, I might be more conservative than even my dad was. Mm. And I just think that's a lack of education to the younger people out there. I know Ryan and Wayne work with a lot of school teachers, and
right.
they're very conservative. They
yes.
keep that money in the stable value fund. They're going to ride that pony till the end.
Right.
Well, guess what? Your quarter horse ends up being a pony, ends up being a Shetland, because your loss of purchasing power is so big.
That's
you
right.
want to go the other way. Start with the Shetland pony. Move to the bigger pony. Go to the quarter horse. Go to the back. That's the way you should invest. And, Doug, I'm telling you, people are sometimes way too conservative, too.
They're way too conservative. And a lot of that comes from what you call in behavioral finance anchoring. They've anchored to a thought process or an event that caused a lot of fear, and they just kind of anchor to that. I'm going to be conservative no matter what happens. And they'll always reference 2008. They'll always say things like, when all my friends around me at work were losing their money, I never lost a penny. The flip side is, if you don't take advantage even of opportunities like that, all your friends around you right now are saying the Dow Jones Industrial Average S&P is up nearly 200%. Since 2008.
Yeah,
some opportunities.
You might have a buddy that started the year with his 401k, the same balance as yours, and he says, hey, I made $15,000. And you say, I made two.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And here's
right.
the thing, folks. When you look at your money and you're investing, the money that you have that you're not going to touch until retirement, call it 20 years, or maybe even if you're retired, mm-hmm. and the same philosophy can hold true, that money you're not going to need until you're post 80. Is going to be invested differently than money that you need tomorrow or to educate your kids
right.
or to pay off the house or whatever it is you've designated an earmark for that. So even as a young person begins to accumulate money and wealth, hopefully over time, if you're 30 years old, not only will you likely be working another 35 years, but then if you're 65 and you have a life expectancy of 90, you know, you're going to be in retirement another 25, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So really that's long term, and you should invest that way. And don't invest your retirement money, teachers, and other conservative
that's
people
right.
the same way you're trying to invest for your kids' education that you need to pay for next year.
You know, David, that's exactly right. I gave a presentation this week. Randy and Kim Stegmiller have been here on the show,
yep.
and they're going through that class, the kids who are seniors, and they're going, you know, what do you do the next six
yeah,
months?
Class 101.
Class 101 is a very, very good, informative program. But I spoke to that group, and I said, listen, many of you are in your 30s, 40s, and early 50s, and people in those three time frames are worried about three things only: paying off their debts, paying for college, and retirement. But I said to them, if the average age in here is 45 years old, you might be looking at your 401k to try to get investment ideas, but that money has 25 years to go. Don't take the same allocation for your retirement plan and apply it to your 529, which you're going to need in less than a year. If the market begins to roll back, then those dollars that are needed may not have time to recover. And that's a time horizons. We go back to that. It's one of the most important things in a portfolio construction and thought
yeah.
process.
And people that are really, really risk adverse, as you go into mm-hmm. retirement, and this is kind of the bucket or pool idea on a distribution plan. Again, if you set this up correctly, money that you're going to need for income, cash flow, between, let's say, 65 and 70, that's invested this way. The money that I'm not going to need for 5 years and then pay it out over the next five through 10, that's mm-hmm. invested this way.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, money that I don't need for 10 that's going to be paid out 5 years later over 15 years, that's invested this way. Money that I don't need for 15 years, you know, out to age 80, that's invested differently. So here's the thing. You create these different accounts with different distribution plans. And then when that account that's way out there, money I don't need until I'm 80, goes down a little bit, you don't freak out because you know the purpose of that is to hang in. You're in it for the long run. It's going to be okay. We're going to take a break. When we come back, had a lot of folks fax and email me this UTC offer, United Technology, of course, the old Otis Elevator. They're offering a lump sum buyout to some of their former employees that are going to get a pension down the road. What does it mean? How do you decide? We'll come back and talk about that. And then also just generally how lump sums are generated and how are they calculated and who offers lump sums and why do they do it? We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. You know, if you're fortunate enough to have a pension, and that's a dying thing these days, the death of the pension, it has been occurring for many, many years. Of course, no one knows how long any of us are going to live, so to promise to pay you a set amount of money for the rest of your life and your spouse's life is a little bit of a daunting task for most companies out there. So they eliminated pensions for the most part and offered 401k plans and other devices for people to retire. But there's still a few companies out there that offer these. Of course, you know, if you work for the public school system or the Monroe County government, federal government, you still have a pension, but they don't offer lump sums. But some of the private companies like AT&T, locally Hoosier Energy, you know, Duke, a lot of them still have pensions and they offer these lump sums. Well, the lump sums right now are huge. And the reason they're huge is the interest rates are so low. This is how this works, and Doug, you can chime in at any time. If a pension plan says, okay, I have to pay you $2,000 a month when you're age 65 and you're getting ready to retire, so listen, I will give you this great big chunk of money to walk away, or I'll give you $2,000 a month. With interest rates, I just mentioned earlier in the show, the 30-year treasury at 2.8%, they look at the interest rates and they do a calculation. If how much money would it take at current interest rates with your current mortality to pay out the $2,000 a month? Well, with interest rates so low, it requires a huge amount of money. Now, if rates went up, let's say rates went up 1%, for the most part, lump sums drop about 10 to 12% in value. So they're very interest sensitive. So right now, the getting is pretty darn good for these big lump sums. And if you're not a spender and you can handle getting a windfall of cash and invest it properly, it's probably the right thing to do. Well, United Technologies is providing an opportunity for just a limited time to receive a, I always love it, for a limited time. And they usually give you about a week or two to make a decision to receive a one-time lump sum payment of your UTC pension in lieu of any future benefits payable out from the plan. So what they're doing, they're giving you a little bit of an incentive. And Doug, this is not uncommon with companies trying to buy out these benefits, is it?
Yeah, we've seen this many times, and we've seen it through GM. And, you know, I know one of the things that we always highlight in the classes that we teach, David, is the survey that talks about the people who are working, who plan to work till age 65, and the people who are actually retired when they actually retired. It was much earlier than 65, and it's because a lot of these places – they're giving these one-time lump sum payouts for their pension. They just really kind of want to get the risk off the books. Pensions aren't cheap to maintain. They're not, you know, cheap, and with low interest rates, they're just not an easy thing for a corporation to continue on with.
You know, as you look at the numbers, I have one in front of me, a real-life example. They were offering about $37,000 cash today. This person was about 39 years old. In lieu of receiving a $232 a month benefit at age 65 for the rest of their lives. So first I said, you know, here's the thing. You have to first compare apples to apples. We're not these aren't apples to pears or apples to oranges or even apples to peanuts. These are apples to apples. This is a guaranteed plan. Right. This is backed by the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. This is guaranteed. So to truly provide a apple-to-apple comparison, you have to say, what can I buy that is guaranteed that at 65, which is ironically almost 30 years later, what can I invest would also be, quote, a guarantee? Well, let's go back to the U.S. Treasury. You can buy a U.S. Treasury today at 2.8%. Well, that 2.8% would take your $37,000, turn it into about $82,000, and then if you paid that out over you and your wife's life expectancy, you know, it'd probably pay you something a little bit close or maybe better to than what they're promising to pay you. So apples to apples, probably okay. But if you're 39 and you're a capitalist and you think that the markets are going to go up, use an 8% factor if you want, over 29 years, you're going to 9 times your money in that period of time, which means that if I take the $37,000, Dougie, I'm doing it right now in front of my front of the listeners. It adds up to over $300,000.
Yeah.
So now you take $300,000 and you put that into a nice looking bond portfolio at let's say 5%. That when that time comes, now you're sitting at $15,000 a year, or of course over $1,200 a month of income. So for most of you, this is going to be a pretty good deal. Now I will tell you that not for everyone. I received one right before I left from someone in our office's brother who worked for UTC years ago, mm-hmm. and he must have been vested a little bit heavier, but he was just there for a short period of time. His benefit was exactly the same, $37,000, but they were promising to pay him $1,100 a month.
Wow.
So you know what? We're going to keep that pension plan in place. Mm-hmm. Who at 37 years old, in this case, has a guaranteed income stream that they can count on for the rest of life?
Nobody.
So it is case by case, but just do the math, do the numbers, and it'll kind of make some sense to you. So if that's you and you need any help analyzing it, just let us know. Give us an email at cfci.us. Contact us. We'll help you out. I think you have to have your completed election forms in by December 22nd here in 2014. We're going to take a break. When we come back, getting back to basics. You know, in everyday practice, I'm just reminded that sometimes we need to calm down and listen to what our folks are saying and keep it simple, stupid. You know what that, remember that acronym?
KISS.
Maybe. KISS.
KISS.
Keep it simple, stupid. We'll be right back. Doug and I are going to KISS. I mean, we're going to keep it simple, stupid.
Yes.
When we come back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, do you ever want a financial guy, a lawyer, a doctor, or anyone in a professional field to simply just KISS it, just keep it simple, stupid? You know, a lot of times we talk about this and we talk about that, and you're like, golly, just tell me what a Roth IRA is, for Christ's sake. I mean, come on. So that's what we're going to talk about. We're just going to talk about some of the very basic things out there. And, you know, one I had this week, and these were all just directly out of personal meetings that I've had in the last week and a half, and we were talking about doing some Roth IRA conversions, Doug, and at the end of the day, at the end of the meeting, the gentleman said to me, now, I don't know much about Roth. The only thing I know is that you go to the bank, and you open up a Roth IRA, and they just pay you a few percent on it. Mm-hmm. And I think, just again, going back to basics, when you talk about an IRA, a Roth IRA, a 401k, a 403b, those are simply just labels that go onto an account to allow the IRS essentially to know what type of an account it is. You can invest inside of an IRA or a Roth IRA in anything you want. You can buy mutual funds, you can buy stocks or bonds or real estate, whatever you want inside those accounts. So no, a Roth IRA isn't just something you go down to the bank and open up and they pay you a few percentage points on. And Doug, I think we're reminded over and over and over that sometimes we do need to just KISS it.
Absolutely. And it's amazing, even when we talk about the different folks that we run into that need some instruction, they may have very large nest eggs. And you just wonder, how did you get such a large nest egg without even really knowing what some of these terms are? And really goes back to David, to just being a good saver and just plodding right along. It's really amazing, but it's almost cute, the simplicity that they use to get to where they're at, yet they don't know.
It's amazing. And you know what, we're not demeaning anyone.
We're trying to
just give you the information, because we do sometimes talk way over people's head. Doug, I had someone in the other day that said, you know, I think I have plenty of insurance. I have five times my income through my work. And, you know, first of all, this person was making about $100,000 a year. They had a stay-at-home mom with five kids. Now, fortunately, not a lot of debt on the books, mm-hmm. but in their, you know, 40 years old. And the first thing I said is, okay, your wife doesn't work. You work. You bring home about $70,000 a year of income, net income. Do you think that $500,000 will provide them the income they need for the next 25 years? Well, the answer is, and he just gave me a blank stare. I said, I can tell you what it is. The answer is no. It's not even close to enough. What about completing the educational planning? Mm-hmm. What about completing, you know, this type of planning or that? You know, and there's no magical wand that I can tell you that you need this much or that much. But I came back to this, and this is something that I learned from you a long time ago. Do you really want to rely on your paycheck, your retirement, and your life insurance all from the same place?
No.
I don't think so. No. And in his case, you know, he needed about 10 to 12 times his income to actually make ends meet. You know, something else that I see happens a lot, especially with federal employees, people in the FIRST system, they get hired on, you know, right out of, you know, high school or at the post office, and they check that box. I want five times my income and life insurance. And one day they wake up, Doug, and they're 50, 55 years old. Well, the Feagly, which is their federal life insurance plan, is really cheap when you're young. But when you get into your 50s, it starts to go up exponentially, and it is so expensive. But no one ever tells you this. No one ever even notices it because it creeps up on you. It's like death by a thousand pinpricks. So most people are better off looking at buying insurance outside their plan. I'm a big fan of not tying all of your benefits to one. I learned that from you, Mr.
Well,
Hughes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you think about if you're healthy today, 10 years from now, you're either going to be healthy or beginning to gradually become less healthy. For the most part, and that's why having some life insurance on your own that is owned individually by you, away from the opportunity for you to lose your job or something like that, is just it just makes a lot of sense to do that.
It does.
It's inevitable surprises, right?
Yeah,
it's
absolutely. The other thing I had this week was, how do I decide if I need long-term care insurance? And I won't be able to answer all this in just a few minutes here on the show. But what different types of ways to cover it? Now, I'll just kind of give you my quick rendition of how you decide if you need it or not. I mean, first of all, you take a look at your streams of income, Social Security, pensions, maybe investment income. How much is that? Is that likely to grow or stay the same? Then you look at the cost of care, and then you inflate that out at a nice 5% inflation rate, and that will be a minimal amount of, I think, that cost of health care will go up. Out to an age that you think is possible you might need it, call it mid to early 80s. Mm-hmm. You might be surprised that a $60,000 cost today over 20 years is going to be about $160,000, $180,000. So then you back out your income and how much then capital would it take to support that, and kind of come up with what I'm going to call the gap, you know, the expense gap. And maybe it's $30,000. Well, you back that down, you might only need to buy $50 to $80 a day benefit today to accrue to that. That's one way to do it in traditional long-term care insurance, Doug. But one of the big things is the insurance companies have realized that, one, they don't necessarily know how much costs are going to be, so they're not real excited about covering you anyway. So they've been jacking up the cost, making it much harder to get long-term care insurance. So the insurance companies have come out with some really cool benefits, haven't they?
They really have. And a lot of these products are now kind of hybrids that you can get away from the old use it or lose it kind of strategy that you have with the life insurance or with the long-term care.
Yeah, which basically means you can accelerate your death benefit if you need to pay for long-term care. If you don't need long-term care, we have a one-on-one chance of dying.
That's right. So one out of one people pass
away. Someone's going to get that benefit. If you want to know more about that, email us again at cfci.us. And Doug, the last thing I want to talk about, just getting back to basics, is most people do not figure in inflation into the retirement plans. And I think just taking a second to understand purchasing power and how the erosion of that works.
Well, you know, David, it's interesting. We all hear about inflation, and we've heard about inflation. It's a word that's commonly used, but very few people understand it. I'm not even sure the people in charge of it really understand what's going on. But it is the erosion of purchasing power. What I could buy 10 years ago with $10,000 is different than what I could buy today with $10,000. So, you know, when you're working, your income generally increases along with inflation. But when you're in retirement, the real question is, will my income still have that ability? And I was running some hypotheticals and things. Dave, and showed one to you of someone who started taking out 5% and took 5% out steadily, or someone who had a 5% withdrawal rate, adding 3% on top of that 5% each year. It's very, very important that people understand that purchasing power is not going down. It is continuing to go up. I think we all have seen and felt that. But in retirement, having a fixed income really means that if prices keep rising, your purchasing power just keeps diminishing. And a couple of things, little examples here. You can buy milk today for $3.29. You can buy a chicken breast for $5.19 or orange juice for $4.29. But 20 years from now, that same milk that's $3.29 today would be $5.94. The chicken breast that's $5.19 today would be $9.39. The orange juice that's $4.29 today would be $7.93. Said one other way, and I like to reference it, for the 1992 presidential election. We all remember that man by the name of Ross Perot. He captivated America by taking TV time. And remember all those charts he had that showed the value of the dollar going down? And so we did a little analysis here from 1992 when good old Ross was making these predictions about the value of the dollar dropping and inflation going up. Nearly 20 years later, the same $10,000 then has the purchasing power of about $6,168 a day, nearly a 40% drop in purchasing power. This is exactly what Ross was telling about, and every one of us have experienced that.
That's right. $2,500 a day, or I'm sorry, per month of income with 3% inflation will buy about $1,380 worth of goods and services 20 years from now. Thank you for that, Doug. When we come back, we're going to talk about some tax planning for year end. Did you know, folks, that if you're in a certain tax bracket, you can actually sell stock and pay zero capital gains? Well, a lot of people don't know this. In fact, last year I talked about this. We've talked about it on the show before, and a person came in to see our tax preparer in our office, and our tax preparer had to come and say they were telling me that you told them this, and I've never heard about this before. So I walked them through it. I said, "I'm sure your system will pick up on it." Well, it did, and of course we were right. They pay zero capital gains rates on a fairly large capital gain. So we'll come back and talk about not just that, but a few other tax planning ideas for year end. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, early in the show, I was, you know, I rarely say this, but I said, for cripe's sake, and if you've grown up around here, we've all heard that, for cripe's sake. But, you know, I heard a comedian one time say, cripes, is that Jesus cripes, the son of gosh? I said, you need to use that one the next time you're at church giving a talk. Right. Well, that's a good one. That's one good for everybody.
Yeah.
Good, clean humor. Okay, let's take a stab here, Dougie, at some tax planning ideas for the year end.
I've got a really neat tax plan.
Let's hear it.
I want you to pay my taxes for this year. That's my plan. How does that sound?
I was going to say is have a baby.
Well, okay.
Maybe. Now we're too old to have kids, Doug.
We don't want to. No.
But, you know, as you talk about some year-end tax stuff, we're really only a couple of weeks away, 3 weeks away from the end of the year. And, of course, cannot forget about taking required minimum distributions if you're over the age of 70 and a half. And you woke up one day and said, I'm 70. I can't believe it. Well, sorry. It's time to take those required distributions from your IRAs and 401k plans. If you don't take the correct amount, folks, it's a 50% penalty. Yes, that's 5-0. So you definitely want to take the RMD. But here's something that, again, a lot of people do not know anything about. And that is, if you are in the 15% tax bracket, now you might say, there's no way I'm in the 15% tax bracket. You might be surprised. For a lot of people, especially those that are retired, you probably are. I mean, for married filing jointly, you can have up to $73,800 of taxable income. Now, that's not adjusted gross. That's taxable income. So let's say that you look at the front of your 1040 and it says, you know, $85,000, $90,000 of adjusted gross income. By the time you go to the second page and you take a standard deduction, a couple personal exemptions, you're going to very well be down in that 15% tax bracket. So turn to the second page, look at your taxable income. Let's say it's $50,000. Well, you have $23,800 of available gain that you can take, capital gains on a sale of a stock, and not pay any tax at all. Now, that's also is included, qualified dividends are also included in this. Now, you will pay state and local income taxes on it because it's part of your adjusted gross income, but you will not. This is something today I was meeting with a couple who have gone through, Doug, a year where they have great assets, huge great investors. They've done a terrific job, huge gains in some individual securities. But this year, the husband really has not had any wages. So last year, their taxable income was around $60,000. This year, their taxable income is going to be about $20,000. Mm-hmm. And they had huge gains and some carry forward losses. And I was like, hey, this is the time, even if you still want to own this stock, this is the time to reset your cost basis. That's the term, reset your cost basis. Let's say your cost was 10, and now that the stock is 50, you could sell that, reset it at 50, so later down the road you have more flexibility. Most people never sell this stuff because of taxes, and I think that's a terrible reason to not sell something. But Doug, you've seen it over and over and over.
Absolutely, David, and it's one of the things that people have a hard time. You know, on the one hand, you read about people like Warren Buffett and people who have bought stocks and they've never, ever, 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 ever sold them. That's one way to do it, but don't forget that's a pooled account and one big company with lots of holding companies underneath. That's a different strategy. And if you can, you know, maximize some tax opportunities, you need to be able to do that and feel free to do that.
Yeah, and we look on the other side. Maybe there's some losses out there that you've not yet harvested. You know, we went through 2008. There were some bloodbaths on some companies that never returned. You might be holding them in your account thinking someday they might come back. Well, they might or might not, but if you have a huge loss, you could take it. Even if you want to own it again, you could buy it. Now, right. On gains, going back to gains, if you want to buy something back after you sold it on a gain, you can do it right away because there are no watch sale rules on repurchasing a security that you took a gain on. Now, if you took a loss, you have to wait 30 days before you rebuy it. So there are some lost harvesting ideas out there as well. The other thing I wanted to talk about is if you have company stock, we mentioned United Technologies earlier. If you have company stock inside of a plan and you have not yet, and you've retired or terminated or something and you've not yet done a rollover, you can do that. You can withdraw the company stock. We teach this in our class. We wrote about it in our book. You can take the company stock out, pay tax on the cost basis only, put it into a regular individual account, and then when you sell it, it's treated as capital gains. Well, again, if you can get your income to the point it's under the 15% tax bracket, you can sell that and pay no gains at all on that excess. We call it net unrealized appreciation. Even a better idea, maybe you want to give the stock to maybe a child who has no income, they sell it, they pay no tax, they assume your cost basis in that. Maybe they pay their education or make a 529 contribution to that.
Absolutely.
Something else, Doug, you talked about 529s. You got to make those contributions before the end of the year to get the tax credit, right?
That's right. And we have, you know, we have the people from College Choice coming in next week to tell us what changes and rules are coming up in 2015. But, yeah, you want to get those contributions in. You get 20% tax credit, not deduction, but credit up to $5,000.
The other thing, going back to the required minimum distributions, you know, back in 2013, there up until 2013, December 31st, you could take money directly from your retirement account if you were over the age of 70 and a half, give it to a charity directly, it not be included in your taxable income, and it would satisfy your minimum distribution, give up to $100,000. Well, I've encouraged people this year to continue to do it, even though it expired 12/31 of 2013, because it's been in legislation. It's going to pass. I know it. At my Ed Slot meeting, they were like, yes, it's going to happen. Probably not after until after the midterm elections. That's happened. So looking in January, I could see them putting this qualified charitable distribution rule back in place, retroactively putting it in place. So here's the thing. If you've not taken your RMD, you are charitably inclined, go ahead and give it directly out of your IRA. What do you have to lose? Worst case is it doesn't happen and you pay taxes on the money, you get a tax deduction or whatever, so go ahead and do it. And Doug, there's a couple of other things that I wanted to mention before we took our last break, and that is take a look at your last paycheck and let's fatten up those 401k contributions or 403bs or 457, whatever it is, because in 2014, you could actually put into your plan $17,500 into a 401k. And if you were over 50 years old, there's a catch-up provision under the $5,500. So you could put up to $23,000 in. So let's say you're, you know, right there at the end, you got $20,000 in your plan, and you might call your human resource person and say, hey, I want to fatten up that thing and get the last $23,000 in. And you know, Dougie, from a debt management perspective, we always encourage people to work on a debt elimination plan prior to retirement. But there's some simple ways a person can reduce their mortgage.
Yeah, and one is accelerate your mortgage payments. Unlike rent, which is paid in advance, mortgage payments are made at the end of your occupancy period. This means that your January 1 mortgage statement represents interest for December, making it eligible for a tax break this year. By accelerating that payment even by just a day, you get an additional deduction for the interest paid. Unfortunately, you can't make your February or anything upcoming mortgage payment earlier to boost your year-end deduction amounts, since write-offs are prepaid interest generally prohibited.
Yeah, and we also encourage you can just make one extra payment per year on a mortgage. You can cut off several years on the backside of your mortgage. Yep. So just a lot of little tips here at the end of the year. And of course, we're always available to answer any questions that you might have. We get questions all the time through our website, cfci.us, and there's a contact us button and boom. And actually, those all come to me directly. Now, and then I actually look at those, tell people thank you for emailing us, and then I send it to the appropriate advisor in the office that can answer that question.
Yep.
Dougie, we're going to take a break, come back, wrap up the show. We're going to talk a little bit about our book that's coming out, Your Guide to Retirement Planning, a resource guide for those over age 50. want to wish a happy birthday to someone very, very important to me, and then also give everyone a little insight of what me and my wife are doing this weekend. So a lot of fun stuff ahead. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the show. Of course, Saturday morning, 9 o'clock, is a great time to listen to it, and always on WGCLradio.com if you didn't catch the show in its entirety. Doug Hughes and I, years ago, thought, you know what, and this is, I'll tell you what, maybe even longer than 10 years, have thought about writing a book. And one of the problems that I've always had, every time it gets close to being done, I think, oh, I'd love to write about this. And finally, a friend of mine said, you know what? You just need to write it, and then that gives you a reason to always bring out other books or little updates to your book. So, Doug, about a year and a half, 2 years ago, we finally put it down and said, we got to get this thing done. We hired a great writer to help us. So Your Guide to Retirement Planning, it's a resource for adults age 50 and over, is done. It's been compliant approved. We're going to be sending it over to the publisher, which is Author House. And I would assume by mid-January it'll be available on Amazon and all that. But Doug, this isn't meant to be a book that you read from cover to cover. It's meant for you to look at the table of contents and say, oh, I have company stock in a plan. I need to read this. Or I need a Social Security idea.
As much of a guide, really. It's to kind of help people to navigate to the chapters that are most meaningful to them.
Yeah, and I'm just really excited about it, and we're proud of it. Mm-hmm. We're still not sure about the cover.
I've just not sold.
I'm not sold on. I had it out today when we were doing our open house at our office and just getting a few opinions from other people on the cover, because like you said, once it goes to print, it goes to print. And one guy described the couple on this as a drunken golfer and an overzealous wife, and I've kind of stuck with that for the last. So we'll see. But we'll give you more information as it gets a little closer to publish a date and how you can get a copy of that. And just wanted to make sure I wished my son William a happy 14th birthday, believe it or not, 14
birthday,
years
Will.
Old. For people that have listened to the show for a long time, I've been on the air for 12 years, I guess. It'll be 13 coming up soon. He was just a baby. And actually, I have a picture in my office of the very, after I came home from the very first show on a Saturday morning, and Misty had made a little sheet of paper that said, good job, Daddy. And he comes walking down the hallway, kind of waddling, and that was cool.
And don't forget the famous call-in.
That's right.
The Will Hayes
happy Father's
him.
Day,
happy
which
Father's
took me
Day.
To tears. So
that's
a
right.
lot of fun stuff. Hey, real quick, I'm going to the White House tomorrow. So on a
all
private
right.
tour of the White House. Actually, yeah, I'll be in the White House Saturday. So I'll tell you all about that next week on the show.
Can't
everyone
wait to hear
have
about
a great,
it.
Great weekend. Thanks to Doug Hughes. We'll talk to you all later. Bye-bye. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Guest opinions on this show do not necessarily represent those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC registered investment advisor, 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.